From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This is a special bonus episode featuring Rob Rail, aka Outer Sect. Last week on the program, you heard about Rail's musical background, his early years in India, as well as the psychedelic trance raves in the mid-90s in San Francisco. On this bonus episode, we'll hear about Rob Rail's legendary studio. He's been putting this together for the past 30 years, and he's hosted Bass Nectar and Odd and all sorts of amazing electronic artists. We'll also hear about his relationship with trance legend Simon Pausford, and we'll also find out just how cheap Perry Farrell is.
What sort of pop music were you listening to at this time?
It was really varied then. I had a bunch of friends who had, I'm going to reveal my age here. I had a bunch of friends who had reel-to-reel tape decks, and they had, you know, we were trading reel-to-reel tapes, and like things that were exciting at that time were Jethro Tull, The Who, Tommy had just come out. You know, this is like, I'm 9-10 years old, so I'm 51 now, so you know, Tommy was a great big deal. The tapes from the Woodstock Festival. Those were kind of the early things. And then there was some cheese. Remember, I was 9. Yeah, the Monkees. Monkees were kind of cool. Lovin' Spoonful. It was, as I got into a teenager, my first real love, though, the first music that I like really, truly thought, oh my God, this is it. Yes. And, you know, if you hear that in the new record, you just really never quite get over your first love. And that was mine. Now, this might be amusing to people. I don't know. I had originally called myself Caldera. So my artist name was going to be Caldera. And there was one track released as Caldera on a compilation by a label called Sai Booty. And I then went into Google one day and typed the word Caldera and got 9 million hits about volcanoes. Which makes sense because that's what the name is from.
Right.
But I realized, wow, that's a really crappy artist name. And if I ever want to get to be number one on Google with that name, I'm going to have to pay a bunch of money for it.
Sure.
So I started looking for another name that wasn't a real word, but sounds like it should be, and that has a certain kind of resonance. And I came up with Outer Sect, and that works well for me as an artist name. It's not a real word. It's not in the dictionary. Any definitions you might have found for it are entirely made up and probably by me. And then as an homage to my previous incarnation as Caldera, I decided to call my first record Caldera. So okay. You know, obviously not in the same league, but if Simon Pausford decided to call the third hallucinogen album Spongle, wouldn't that be amusing?
Well, he'd certainly have to credit you on that then.
Yeah, if he gets the idea from here, he should, you know.
Anyway. Toss you a little something.
but that would throw everybody for a loop. That would possibly blow some people's minds if it in between confusing the hell out of them. But you know,
right. A lot of your brand of magic takes place in that studio. Tell me a bit about your home setup. I understand this has been, you know, a quarter century in the making.
Yeah, I've been working on it for a long time. Well, the biggest piece is this Surge modular synthesizer. That's probably the most eye-catching thing. And it's a three-panel modular synthesizer that uses banana plugs. I could point you to some of them on the web. It's a beautiful sounding analog synthesizer. There are probably other synthesizers in the world that sound as good. I have never heard one that sounds better. And it's just an amazing synthesizer. And having had it for more than 10 years now, probably I've had it for 15 years, and I still find new things to do on it. Although just the fact that I've had it for 15 years, I've got patterns of working with it now that are kind of frustrating. Sometimes I have to consciously say, okay, I'm not going to do things the way I've always done them on this thing. I'll have to try something new, even if it doesn't work right away.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's these. I've got a couple Korg MS-20s here. I've got a pair of them because, there's a couple reasons for having two, but one of them is that they process signals really well, and with two, you can process stereo signals. But they've both got, Simon Posford signed them at my request on the keyboards with a Sharpie, so they both say have nice messages from Simon written in black across the white keys. And the MS-20s are kind of a story in and of themselves because it's largely because of these MS-20s that I wound up meeting Simon Posford and then eventually getting to jam live with them a couple times and so far, and who knows, maybe more in the future. And they're lovely patch-based synths too, and I have these special cables that let me patch those into the Surge so I can create this kind of patch monstrosity of, you know, some MS-20, some Surge, and, if I run out of you can hook them all together in crazy ways and do weird things with them. And the MS-20s, if you ever see a video interview, there's a video tour Simon does of his studio up on YouTube somewhere. If you look at that, he talks about the MS-20 a lot. It's one of his favorite synthesizers. So when he would come into town asking, In the early days, when Simon came to town, now he's all pro, he's got management, he gets whatever he wants. But in the early days when he came to town, it would be like, everybody would, he would kind of put the word out over email and everybody would say, hey, what do we got that Simon can play on when he comes? And he'd usually ask for something like an SH-101. And I'd say, well, I've got these MS-20s, if he wants to use those. And usually we'd get a hell yeah remote.
An emphatic response right away.
Something like that. There was a delay because it would come through email and through the promoter and find its way to me and then come back. But yeah, eventually the result was, oh yes, we like the MS-20s. We'd like to use those. Yeah. So I wound up, bringing a lot of gear out for Simon's shows here in San Francisco. And eventually wound up getting to open for him a couple times as well. And then eventually most recently wound up getting to actually jam with him as part of one of his sets. And that was huge fun. Oh my God, that was great.
Tell me a bit about that. How did that come about? Did he ask you to just hop on stage after his set or did you plan it out beforehand?
Well, okay, the most recent time we did plan it out beforehand, but the really funny one is the one that happened at Symbiosis this year, which, by the way, I just want to give a shout out to Symbiosis because the Symbiosis people, they just throw the best parties ever and they always lose money. It's so sad. They can't seem to figure out how to make money on it. But for a party going experience, you really want the promoters who are willing to throw $300,000 at you and say, have a good time.
Yes.
And they're gonna put up a million. They're gonna make 700,000 back, and that's 300 G that the party goer gets to enjoy at the party promoter's expense. And so this is what you want if you're going to a party. And honest to God, Symbiosis, the best parties ever. So anyway, the most recent Symbiosis. I played something like, my set was something like 11 to 12 on Saturday morning. And that was, and you know, I didn't have to play any after that. So that Saturday night, I was like, oh, I'm going to just enjoy the party. And Simon was playing Sunday 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. as Hallucinogen, and then doing, 9 a.m. to 10:30 as Spangl on a different stage. But anyway, so I was just fully enjoying the party. And let's just say I was up all night having a wonderful time. And by the time 7 a.m. rolled around, I was just twisted out of my mind and in no shape to do anything at all. But I showed up at the stage to see Simon and to make sure that he had my gear available to him for his set. And Simon, he's like, oh, Rob, it's so good to see you. Everything's going wrong. And they couldn't find an interface he needed to hook up his laptop for his Hallucinogen live set. So he was just going to do it on CDs. And they hadn't gotten any of the gear out to him. So I rounded up some friends and said, let's get him the gear. And why can't we find this interface? Anyway, so finally, still no computer interface. He's spinning Hallucinogen off CDs, but we've got some live gear set up for him. And he says to me, oh, hey, Rob, you want to jump on the keyboards for a while? I'm like, oh, of course. Oh, my God. I had no idea. So I played with for about 10 minutes, and I, being totally twisted out of my mind, I played some god-awful Rick Wakeman-sounding lead synthesizer or whatever on top of his Hallucinogen, and it was fun for 10 minutes, but I kind of looked at it and said, oh, I'm just going to bow out. These people are here to see him, not see me riff, and I'm just so wasted. I can't do it. But that was the first experience. And then when he came to San Francisco most recently, I talked to him on the phone a bit, and we agreed that I would bring out a bunch of gear and sit in with him live after opening for him as Attersect. I would sit in with him live on the Surge. You know, I brought the MS-20s out to Symbiosis, which is kind of a camp out, but the Surge, you know, I can bring it out in the city, but I'm not taking that out to a camp out environment. It's not going to Burning Man or anything like that.
Right.
And so I brought all this gear out to the Symbiosis, to the last Spangl Hallucinogen show here in San Francisco, and wound up having time to only hook up about half of it. There was like $5,000 worth of gear sitting on the floor that never even got connected to anything. Most expensive doorstop ever. But I had the Surge up, and I played Surge through most of his set, and it was a great experience. And this time I was ready for it. I was not caught by surprise at a party moment, shall we say.
Okay. That's the most delicate way to put it.
Yeah. So I think that came off reasonably well. I've got some good audio tapes of it. It's all right. Sounds good to me.
That's terrific.
There's a good video of it up on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and just search Hallucinogen Attersect, you'll find a video of Simon and I jamming live.
Your studio has attracted several artists from across the electronic music spectrum. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, the sort of people that have come in and used your facilities?
Well, Perry Farrell came in here to do some work on a thing he released. I don't think any of the things that he did here ever got released. And by the way, he never paid me. So, Perry, if I ever see you, you've been caught stealing, brother.
That's fantastic.
Goa Gill mastered a couple CDs here. Actually, several CDs. There was like in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was the mastering studio for Goa Gill. Haven't really done so much of it lately. I basically, by and large, trance doesn't really work for me anymore. I kind of did it for 10 years, and I can't really, mostly it doesn't hit me the way it used to. with the exception of hallucinogens. Sometimes I can get going to hallucinogen, but I can't really listen to Gil anymore. And Bass Nectar and I have a long history. He has been also in my... Bass Nectar is actually the guy who brought Perry Farrell into my studio. And so he and Perry and I spent a couple days in here fooling around. I guess that's the name dropping.
Yeah, thing. That was the name dropping portion of the show.
The name dropping portion of the show. Well, actually, it's kind of all been like that, hasn't it? Oh, Ott came in here now, but that was a totally different thing. Oh, and Shulman came in here too, also completely different. Ott, I actually hired to come in here and show me how to mix, basically. I'd heard Blumenkraft. This was before Skylon was released. And on his website, he had this thing that said, you know, I can give lessons to people. I can teach you how to do stuff. And by the way, I've worked with Brian Eno and Peter Gabriel, and I'm not sure I have all his name drop list right, but it was definitely Eno was on there. I remember that.
Damn.
And I thought, well, I can get this guy who's been an engineer, you know, who's a real engineer, knows this shit, to come in. Pardon my, I guess you can say that on a podcast.
Internet radio. It's the way of the future.
Internet radio. You can say whatever you want. All seven words. Maybe I should go through them right now just for fun. So Ott came in here. Anyway, I just thought it would be a good idea to hire him and learn for what I could from him. And I thought the best thing to do would, rather than like, I don't know, go to his studio where he... you know, has things set up for him. I wanted him to come here and show me what, you know, how to make best use of my studio. And as long as we had him here, why waste the opportunity? Let's have him play a party. And the party largely wound up paying for my lesson. So that was great. The party paid for itself and then some.
There you go.
And so I brought him in here and he, you know, said, well, you're doing this wrong. And this is how you construct a mix. And you really need to make better use of compression. It's not so much about equalization. I mean, I could go through the tips, but the tips for me would be different from the tips for you.
And he'd have to charge.
And I'd have to charge. But it really helped. It really helped. And then after he was done, it didn't end there because he would, you know, he said, okay, you know, get your studio sorted out right. He made a bunch of suggestions about changing the layout of it, which after he left, it took me a month to rewire my studio the way I thought he wanted it. I thought he thought it should be and that I thought it should be after talking to him. So I spent a month rewiring my studio, then started mixing again and finally started sending him some mixes. He would make comments, critique them, say, no, you're not done yet. Yes. And then finally, you know, we got through one mix and he said, you're done. Put this one away. It's great. I'd be very happy if it was my mix. And then we went through a similar process, but quicker with one more track. And after that, I had a very distinct, I could put together a mix quickly and repeatedly have it be good. And I had a very distinct style. And it really created a breakthrough for me in my ability to mix. Because on Caldera, you know, I was mixing, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I was more of a writer, musician, not an engineer, technician. And, you know, switching to that hat was hard for me. After the sessions with Ott, it became easier. So I put a few more tracks together and started sending them out to labels. And Aleph Zero got interested. And so after, you know, and by the way, Aleph Zero and I had a bunch of conflicts about what should be on the record, what, you know, but they were my editors and I had fights with my editors, but having editors helps. And the end result was that it's a better CD because they were there to edit it. And Yaniv Shahar, thank you a million. It's been great. Anyway, Yaniv Shulman came over and he hung out in my studio for a while and he had a show in Mexico and something in Canada and California was in between there. And he had like a month between the shows and he just came out here and kind of hung out for a couple of weeks, played a show or two when he first got here, waited a couple of weeks, another couple of shows before, and he visited, he had some friends around here he was visiting, but he, you know, would pop by and stay for a day or two here and there for a period of a few weeks. He was an occasional guest and he reminded me of some things that Ott had perhaps mentioned in passing, but I had forgotten or overlooked, ignored, missed, for, you know, whatever. and was very helpful with finishing up the CD and getting the final touches, getting that final sheen on it. So Shulman was here. So this studio has seen a lot of luminaries come in and out.
It's got to be worth the cash you've dropped on all your little pieces of equipment and gear.
Well, and in terms of money, not really. It hasn't paid for itself. But in terms of good times and fun and, you know, what makes life worth living, sure, I'd rather have this, a timeshare and, you know, a timeshare in Tahoe or something.
There you go. The next regular UNS podcast will feature Future Primitive, that's Rain from the Pacific Northwest, sort of a mid-tempo, dark-style DJ with a little bit of dubstep, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. He's got a new EP out now. It's called Luminous. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints, or you'd like to be a guest on the program, please contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theunce.com. And remember to go to theunce.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And right now we've got a couple of contests going on, one for Sonic Bloom, one for Camp Bisco. If you are a producer, if you're an electronic artist, put together a track, put together a remix, send it out, and you can win free tickets to those festivals. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, write us a review, tell us what you think of the show, and if you want to find out how you can support the UNS in your area, please contact avi@theunce.com. That's AVI@theunce.com. We'll catch you on the next episode of the UNS Podcast.